Okay, welcome to the Welcome to the 36 Point Reflex Blue Show. We're doing it for real, I guess. Donovan, I gotta tell you, for April Fools, I really wanted to, last year I think we set the site in Comic Sans and Papyrus.
Oh yeah, that was
hot.
Cool.
This year I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna do that again, which is kind of lame, but we're gonna do it in Cooper Black. And the reason I backed down from that was because I was kind of worried that it was going to look so awesome that I wouldn't ever want to change it back.
It was really hard to take down the Papyrus and Comic Sans from last year. It was a combination I hadn't seen before, like lethal trajectory of awesomeness.
I know. People couldn't handle it. So, Donovan, hey, what are we doing here today? We have a special guest.
Yeah, this is episode 30 or season 2, episode 2, however you count. You know, I don't care how you guys number these things. And we brought
our 30th show,
something like
an anniversary or something.
And what we have is we've got Timothy O'Donnell from New York with us.
Hey guys, how you doing?
How you doing today, man?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Well, we finally got our poop in a group. We thought we'd do a show.
Sounds good.
Timothy's got a book out by Rockport. This thing is called Sketchbook: Conceptual Drawings from the World's Most Influential Designers.
Now, Timothy, you have to let me know, and I actually probably should have asked you this question before we started recording. Ha ha. Is the book out now? Is this available now, or is this out soon?
It is out soon. It's out May 1st.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, yeah, that's coming up. This is a little preview then.
Exactly.
So what you do is you go to Amazon, you pre-order this book, you pre-order Steve Gordon's book. They're coming out right at the same time. It's going to be fantastic.
You might get an awesome, awesome package in the mail that has both of those books in them at the same time like I did. But yeah, okay, so first off, let's point everybody in the right direction. You go to timothy-o'donnell.com/sketchbook, and we'll have that link up for you on 36 Points. So if you don't want to go through all of the spelling and typing on that, you just head over to 36point.com.
And
there will be places to go. But
Nate, let's actually introduce our guest properly. And I'm just going to steal this directly from the inside of the book because, you know, I like this plagiaristic thing.
So you have it.
Yeah, Timothy O'Donnell's studies at the Rochester Institute of Technology switched from traditional methods to computer-aided techniques midway through the program. This brief but influential experiment on the hands-on craft of design led him to join Von Oliver's V23 studio in London, renowned for their expressive organic work. After 5 years in England, O'Donnell returned to his native New York, where he has worked for MTV, Razorfish, and New York Magazine. In each position, including his current role as design director for Johnson & Johnson's Global Strategic Design Office, he has strived to keep his lifelong love of sketching and hand lettering integral to his working process. Did you get to do any, like, hand-drawing MTV logos when you were there? I mean, that's all I want to know. Are you going to bring that back, that little animated guy on the moon?
I don't think I did anything hand-drawn there, actually. It was in the middle of sort of their love affair with Helvetica, I think, and so I was trying to bring it a little bit more organic. But
were you there during the Carson Daly Empire?
Or I was, yeah. Empire? I'll tell you, the thing about it was we were on the 24th floor, and you would just hear shrieks and screams, and I mean it was just terrifying because all day long you would hear these screams from down below, people watching TRL, and you know, you couldn't go out and get lunch because it would take you an hour just to get out the door because there were so many people around. So it was interesting but sort of annoying that you couldn't go out and get a sandwich.
Yeah, you know, can't tell if anybody's getting shot downstairs, everybody's screaming and yelling. Oh, no, they're just doing TRL again.
Yeah, I mean, you never get used to it. You just, you know, 20,000 teenagers shrieking, and you just assume, you know, World War III is hit every day, you know, Monday through Friday.
Right. You're just, ham, the war's on again!
So, Tim, how long have you been working on this book? And did you originally talk to Rockport, or did they contact you? How did this come about?
The book was something I had the idea for many years, actually a pretty long time, a good 5 or 6 years, and I would keep mentioning it to people, and they would say, you know, that's a great idea for a book, and I would say, yeah, thanks, and I would do nothing about it. And then eventually enough people said it's a really great idea that I sort of went to the library and figured out how to write a book proposal and started sending it out. And I initially sent it to Faden, and they were interested, and it sort of dragged out for a bit, and then they turned it down. And once they turned it down, I sort of said, I guess it's a, you know, worthless idea, and sort of left it. And once a year I would, you know, dust off the proposal and send it out. And I guess the third time I sent it to Rockport, and they sort of immediately were interested in it, which is great. I was really excited. But I hadn't completely prepared myself for the fact that it might happen. So then, you know, it was like, well, now we're on the schedule and you've got to get it done. And it was a little bit of a pipe dream for me. So I found out very quickly that, you know, it was going to be a lot of work.
Now, other than like your handwritten note at the end where it says Milton declined. So I assume Milton Glaser declined in this book. How did you go about deciding what type of designers and what was your process for thinking about what type of work you wanted to show from all of these sketches from different designers that are in it?
Initially, I really wanted it to be very broad and sort of feature people from all kinds of different disciplines, not just graphic design. At some point, I had a fantasy that it could be a series of books and each book would feature a certain discipline. But, you know, with Rockport, where their core audience is really graphic design, you know, we decided, and that's where I come from as well, so we decided to sort of focus more on that. But they were great about allowing me to include, there's an architect in the book, there's a couple of photographers, there's some product designers. So what I basically, you know, because I'd been knocking the idea around for a few years, I just had this list that got added to, you know, every year of, you know, 7,000 people that, oh, they would be fantastic. And I just started reaching out to anyone I knew who was connected and trying to get through to people. And it sort of ran the gamut between people who would respond right away and say yes, and the next morning you'd have, you know, a gig worth of artwork in your FTP folder. And then some people, it took a little bit longer to track down and get them to commit to it.
Tim, were you surprised by anybody that got back to you? Anyone you kind of had like a pie in the sky, said, this guy's never going to get, you know, they're never going to do it?
You know, Stefan Sagmeister, who actually declined to be in it, but he, I was interested in him because I think he's someone whose work is so visible. And I think part of the premise behind the book is that, you know, we see so many, you see the final piece everywhere. And in his case, you know, there's certain works of his that I must have seen 20 times in different magazines and things. In his case, he declined, but he declined incredibly politely, considering he must get asked about four times a day to be in books and things. I was surprised at how nice he was about it. But
I've heard he's actually a pretty nice guy. But what a lot of people don't know is, you know, that poster where he carved the information into his body. He actually sketched that out on 7 different interns first. One of the things that you touched on in the introduction, I want to talk to you because a lot of this is about the designer's process. There's a couple notes up front there. Yeah, I think it might have been Saul Bass at the front. Now the book is in the other room with Donovan, but I think it might have been Saul Bass that said that, you know, students have this idea that the idea, the final concept springs fully formed from the designer's mind, and that when it takes them a very long time to come up with something worthwhile, they feel like they're doing it wrong.
Right.
Do you feel like that's still a problem for a lot of young designers that you may run into these days? Is this book's hand in illuminating the process of design? Is it geared towards helping that? I mean, what do you want people to take away from it, I guess?
One thing that would really make me happy, besides, you know, 7,000 people purchasing the book, it'd really be great if students, you know, were the sort of main beneficiaries of the book. When I was in school, you know, I was sort of drawn to designer monographs and at the same time totally intimidated by them, because it does just make it seem like these people are just operating on a far higher level than you are ever going to get to. And so what I'm hoping is, by showing that some of these people who do this amazing work, you know, their sketches they're kind of a mess. And I think that's great. I mean, it's very brave of them to also share that with us, because they don't need to. But right. I'm really hoping that students will take some sort of heart from that even these people that are very well known and have, you know, enviable careers, you know, their initial design process is completely, you know, fraught with wrong turns and just, you know, not having a clue where to go and just sort of a bunch of false starts. That's what really I was hoping people could take heart from that, you know, everyone.
Except for Marion Banshees, whose sketches look like her finished work. It's unbelievable.
Her work's phenomenal. But you know, I think some people definitely gave me a ton of stuff. Some people that I was local to, Sam Potts, you know, essentially let me come in and just talk with him for a while and then just take his stuff away, and he had tons of books. In Marion's case, she only really had four things around. I think that's the other thing about the book, is that it shows the variation, where some people are incredibly tight initially, and then some people are just flailing around. And that's sort of more my process. In the beginning, I just have no idea what I'm doing, and I need to work through that.
Have you changed the way that you sketch based on looking at how other people do it? Has your process changed at all?
I really want to change my process, and I keep meaning to change it. I think some of the people that I met with were had a very sort of formal way. They had the same book. I mean, Michael Beirut's a great example, where he's been using the same book for the last 20 years or so. And I love that sort of formality of it, and the fact that they all just fit nicely on a shelf, and it's very regimented. And I always mean to do that, and the reality is that I just end up sketching on any paper that I find, and I've just got drawers filled with scraps of newspaper and every cool notebook I ever find in a store. I buy a sketch in about 20 pages of it, and then I forget about it and move to the next book. So I would love my process to be tighter, but it's just not. It's just not the way I work.
Sadly, that sounds a lot like my process.
I was gonna say, I've usually got about four or five books going at once, and then I'll invariably wind up over here at 36 Point Recording Studio. Need to bum one off Donovan. Then I'll take that one with me. So now I got six. So yeah, and I mean, with Michael Beirut, I almost wonder, I wonder if he was just sitting back, however many years ago it was he started with that, and think, I'm going to buy the next one, make it the same book, just in case in 20 years someone wants to put a book together about this junk. It's all going to be perfect.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's hard to say, but I mean, it's pretty impressive. He sort of, he said, I'll leave them in the conference room at Pentagram, and you can come over. I went over on a Friday evening, and I had sort of a limited amount of time to, photograph them, and you're faced with however many books are there. I mean, I forget now, but it's a good, 50, 70 books, some ridiculous.
Donovan, you knew, right?
I think it's 85.
That sounds about right. God. And I mean, of course, it would make a great book entirely just using his sketches. So, what I have in my book is like the briefest sort of overview of his stuff. I mean, there's tons of great stuff in there. And what I found fascinating about his books is that it really showed a side of his work that I don't think you see necessarily from the finished pieces. I mean, he does some great, hand lettering stuff that I haven't really seen come across in his own work. His own work tends to be, fairly clean and precise, and there's some really cool lettering going on in those books.
Yeah, and I think, some of his stuff that, he did a post a while back on Design Observer that just showed his student work. And I had a chance to talk to him at the last AIJA conference just for a moment. And that came up, and he was like, yeah, everyone's really responding to that, but I don't know why. And I was like, well, man, it's because no one can do that kind of stuff by hand these days. Everything kind of gets regimented into the computer and organized and done there. And, when he showed his old work, and it was all, every bit as pristine as what gets produced on the computer nowadays, he just did it himself. So he's certainly got that ability.
Absolutely. And I think that's another reason why people respond to that stuff, and they respond to the sketches, because it's such a personal look at these people that are very famous, and their work is known, worldwide. But these are things, there's one copy, they're not mass produced, and they're sort of covered over with personal notes and, doodles. It's just incredibly personal. I think, people respond to seeing the human side of the celebrities.
Right. And one of the things that you touched on, again, or it might have been, I think this might have been Stefan Bucher that mentioned that it's this idea of your sketchbooks are your private failings as a designer, that it's all of your ideas that don't work out, and here they are all collected. But no one ever really gets to see that. They only get to see the final, the thing that works.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's so important to have the, to sort of have permission to fail somewhere. In our office at Johnson & Johnson, it's an open plan space, and we all have the sort of biggest screens that you can get, those enormous sort of cinema screens. And,
right.
You know, I'll start something, and about 30 seconds in, someone will be walking by and be like, ugh, that's terrible, you know, and you haven't even had a chance to. You know when your hand slips on the font menu and it lands on Hobo and you don't even know why Hobo is loaded into your machine?
Oh, but, yeah, that's accidental.
That's usually when the most senior person in the office walks by at that moment where you've just got this, you know, crap on your screen. And so, you know, it's great to have the freedom to try something and decide privately, this is terrible or this merits, you know, further exploration.
So, Tim, you obviously, you wrote the book. Did you handle the design of it? How does that work? Because I know sometimes, like, specifically with Rockport, they'll be like, okay, you can write it, but we're going to have someone else put it together. You know, what was that whole process like?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to design it. I mean, they asked me if I had anyone in mind to design it, and I said, you know, me, actually.
You said, and hell yes.
Well, it's the opportunity, you know, that you don't get very often, and I felt so close to the material that I really wanted to be in charge of it. Of course, that added just an enormous amount of work to my life, because I was sort of trying to get the manuscript done and trying to chase down people to get their artwork and then trying to design it at the same time. So, but they were very supportive of that. And, you know, they're very happy with what I did, which I was thrilled about. But, yeah, it was, you know, it just seemed like every 3 or 4 months there'd be a weekend where nothing was going on. And then Monday there'd be a call like, you know, we've got to hit our next milestone on this. We need another, you know, 80 pages, or we need another 20 spreads designed, or this. So it was pretty intense here.
I was going to say, I mean, it's not a thin book. How many pages are we at on this thing?
I think it's 192.
Yeah, and it's substantial. It's not like it's, you know, necessarily like giant photo, tiny caption.
Now, the thing that caught me is, looking through this thing, and the thing looks gorgeous, by the way, is looking through it and seeing how many photos are in it, and I think I'm going to just flip through it real quick because it's just a big photo book, but I was actually shocked with how much text you actually wrote. I mean, there's actually, like, quite a bit of copy for what this is.
And you said that you originally were trying to contact someone else to write the book?
Right. A good friend of mine, Helen Walters, is a design writer for Business Week, and she's written a number of books. And you know, she initially was going to help write it, which I was thrilled about because I like to write. But you know, I was aware of the amount of work I'd be taking on, so I was thrilled she was going to do it. And then her schedule just got insane, so she had to sort of pull out of it. Although she acted as an advisor the whole way through, but. You know, the thing that, as gorgeous as the images are, what I was really hoping to get was, you know, some of the context behind the drawings and try to get the thinking behind it. And so that, you know, that made it necessary to have a lot of text. And towards the end of the book, I wanted to put the whole book in context and write a section that were my experiences about designing the book and writing it. To sort of demystify that whole process as well, you know.
So at the end of this, we've got, like, say, your sketches of the sketchbook book.
Yeah, and he's got the little note that says that Milton's not in it. What he's fantastic. Got. That's what he got.
There's other stuff, too, besides that note. And he had a very good reason for declining and was very nice about it. But I wanted to make it as honest as possible. And the reality is that when, you know, you think you might be able to have Milton Glaser in your book, and then respectfully declines, you're bummed, you know. And so I wanted to show the sort of, you know, the true story behind the book, which is that I was bummed out and he couldn't do it.
How many of these people did you know that are in the sketchbook, or are these people just know of their work?
I'm actually looking through, I have to look at the contents list myself. I think it's really only two or three people. Chris Big, I used to work with at 480 Records, and he's one of my very best friends, and his books had always been a huge inspiration. So I knew before the book had even gotten accepted by a publisher, I knew that if it happened, he had to be in it. And Rob O'Connor at Stylo Rouge is another company in England that I worked for after I left 480. And he's just a great guy. He's just one of the nicest people in the industry. So I said, gee, I hope you, I don't know if you sketch, but I hope you do, because I'd love to have you in the book. Almost everyone else were really people that I just sort of reached out to because I thought they'd be interesting, and I was really trying to get a very varied selection of people. And I was really, I mean, it was really overwhelming how this, you know, the problem with this book is that it's really asking a lot of the contributors. It's not just send over a few JPEGs of your latest work. You know, it's you really have to dig out these books. Lance Wyman, you know, the famous designer of the Mexico Olympics graphics, he wrote me back. He's like, I just have to go through my attic, you know, I'll see what I can find. I mean, people had to sort of take time out of their lives, you know, and find this stuff. So I'm incredibly appreciative that they would go to the trouble.
Yeah, that stuff was really cool to see. I mean, I was expecting when the book showed up that it would be, well, like it starts off with small stakes, I think, and mm-hmm. and you know, most of that work's pretty recent, and that was my expectation going in. But then you get back and yeah, the old Mexico Olympics work, and I mean, it's there's such a great sort of sampling of so many different kinds of work, so many different time periods. I mean, you really have done a fantastic job, I think, of showing a lot of different kinds of design, but how they all seem to stem from this same sort of great process of just sitting down sketching some junk out.
Well, thank you very much. No, I mean, yeah, it was definitely a goal to try to make it as broad as possible, and I'm glad that you like it.
Real quick, favorite designer sketchbook in the book?
Oh man, it's got to be Chris Bigg. Even though I'm the most familiar with them, it's just they're just beautiful.
Okay, well, I got another question then. Who surprised you the most? Because like that you didn't know what their work would look like. Which one kind of surprised you?
I have to say, Michael Beirut really surprised me because you know, I'm not like a huge follower of his career. I mean, but you can't help but know a lot of about him. Just because if you're in the industry, you know, he's such a huge figure. But I was really surprised at just sort of how expressive they were. And I don't think I really thought they'd be like that. And so it was a double shock that, one, there were so many of them. And it was so overwhelming. I mean, I just sort of sat down for 10 minutes, like, you know, amidst this pile of books and thought, where am I going to even begin? I mean, I don't even know where to, you know, you sort of crack open the first one from 1980. And you just think, you know, I'm going to be here till 4 a.m. going through these things. And then of course, they come out and say, you got to get out of here by 7. You know, we all want to go home. So then you realize you've got, you know, an hour to pick and choose very rapidly. But he was a big shock because of the sheer volume. And then just the, you know, there's a very sort of expressive quality to the sketches that I just found great. So that was probably the biggest surprise for me.
Nice.
Okay, well, before we leave, we do have a new segment, Nate.
It's not new anymore, dude. It's like sophomore year, really.
This is the student tip by Mig Rays.
We like to call it the Mig tip. Let's cue up that intro music.
All right, guys. So for this design student tip, I want to talk all about volunteering and volunteering your time. Because I've learned that one of the best ways that I've established relationships with other designers, professionals, whatnot, is by volunteering. So, you know, whether it be a big design conference or a smaller event run by AIGA or even in the classroom, do your best to do whatever you can to volunteer and offer your time for free. Nate, Donovan, Timothy, back to you guys.
Oh man, that was enlightening. If I
man, I love those MIG tips. My favorite tip is a tip of MIG.
I have to wait to hear the MIG tip. I mean, I would like to hear it too. I think I could benefit from it.
Hopefully, 24 hours, we'll have that live to the world, and everyone can share in MIG's brilliance. Tim, thank you so much for being on the show with us. We're really looking forward to the book. Actually, that's kind of a misnomer. We already have the book. We're not looking forward to it anymore, but we're looking forward to everyone else looking forward to it because it, I just think it's really cool. I've got a giant, like, I don't know, 20-gallon tub of sketchbooks that takes up, you know, a good quarter of my closet in my home office that, you know, date back to when I was like maybe 8. So I've still got all mine. So that's why. Big reason that I, you know, I got a lot of love for the book. So
in another couple of months, I'll be recovered enough to start thinking about Sketchbook 2.
He's got enough to fill the whole thing for you.
Yeah, Sketchbook 2, even sketchier. We didn't even find this one. But yeah, thanks again for being on the show. And Donovan, I think that's all we got, man.
All right, we'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
The cool thing is that, let's say you're at a small event or a conference. Chances are, you know, as a college student, you're not making a lot of money, so you'll probably get in for free. And what's cool is you'll get behind-the-scenes access to all these professionals who are setting this up. And you show that you give a damn. You show that you're passionate and you're memorable. You're going to have a face to a name, so that way next time you approach, you know, somebody that you worked with at a conference, you'll be like, hey, you know, I was a volunteer at so-and-so conference or event. And that way you're instantly, you know, memorable. And in the classroom, you kind of position yourself as a leader. Students will look up to you and look to you for help. So it's a win-win-win. And in the end, it's all about networking, kids. Networking. So there you go. Volunteer. You get good stuff out of it. And you build relationships and your network. So.